I'm speaking today with State Representative Centronia Thompson. Representative, you've been in the House for a long time now, since 1973, I believe.
That's right, 73.
So tell me, you know, what motivates you to keep wanting to go back and keep doing it after all this time?
Well, I think it's the issues that comes up, and looking at being able to do something about it with the experience that I have gained, knowing how to work the system more effectively for my constituents, and how I can more effectively be able to help to effect change or to maintain the advancement that we have made over the last 38 years.
What would you say is the biggest change you've seen in that time?
Oh, my God.
Been a lot, I imagine.
You know what? I think things have really gone full circle. When I first came in 1973, women couldn't get credit in their names. They couldn't hold a credit card. They couldn't buy property in their names, even if they had their own money. And ERA and abortion was the big thing. I think Roe versus Wade was a real big deal right then. And we thought that all of the prejudices and about groups and things are probably going to be something of the past, only to learn that it is just something that lives on in the minds and the hearts of people, and every once in a while it just surfaces.
And the groups change.
And the group changes, but the issues, the prejudices, all those things remain.
Okay. 2 years ago at this time, Tom Craddock was the Speaker of the House, and you know, Democrats, for the most part, didn't much care for him. There were some Republicans who didn't either, and eventually that gave way to there being a different speaker. But at that time, you were putting yourself forward as a candidate for Speaker of the House.
Yes.
I noticed that the Centronia for Speaker website is still up. Are you actively seeking that at this time?
You know, well, I just forgot it was up.
No.
No, I'm not. I'm not actively seeking it. What my concentration now is upon redistricting. And probably what budget cuts can we muster together support to prevent that would be a train wreck to the people that we really represent.
Well, let's talk about that, since
okay.
The projection is, you know, $18 billion, give or take,
yeah.
Deficit. How should the state of Texas deal with that? How should the legislature deal with that in 2011?
Well, several years ago, I think it was during the Clayton 10-year when he was Speaker, we created what was called a rainy day fund. And this rainy day fund was to be able to tide us over in hard times. And I think that if we utilize some of the rainy day fund, some of the cuts and things that maybe won't be as detrimental to our constituency as it would if we didn't make use of the rainy day funds.
I mean, everybody's talking about cuts, but it seems to me that the revenue side of thing needs to be addressed as well. As you know, the legislature, when it had to respond to a court ruling over school finance, when the property tax cap was ruled unconstitutional, the response of the legislature was to cut property taxes by a third. And they were supposed to have made that money up with general funds, but no surplus this year. What needs to be done about what, if anything, needs to be done about that?
You know, that's a very interesting question, and I'll say it's interesting because when I went in the legislature in 1973, there was a lawsuit filed on unequal funding in public education, and the Supreme Court of Texas at that time overruled that lawsuit. And then there was an Edgewood following that, Edgewood 1, 2, and 3, and so forth. And then we were finally able to get funding. Now, how we get there? Unfortunately, we're just going to have to be able to re-funnel monies that are... Let me just say this. As a state, we're going to have to make up our minds of whether or not we want to educate people, and whether or not we're going to give them a quality education. And I think that that's going to, if we think about that, that's going to reduce the number of people that go to prison. Because when you stack up the cost of a person going to prison per year, depending upon the crime that they have committed, and the cost of a child being in public education, it is a huge, huge gap. If we're serious about education, that's going to reduce the number of people over the long run who will be going into our penal institutions. We're going to have to be able to address that. that's not going to be something that's going to be shrinking overnight in terms of dollars. Secondly, we're going to have to generate better job opportunities for people. And thirdly, we're going to have to find a way to let people know that government cannot answer all their problems. We have put people on a sugar tit, and a sugar tit, for your information, because you're too young to know, was many years ago when kids could not nourish their mother's milk because of maybe lactose tolerance. We don't know what the problem was then. They developed a little lard and sugar, and they would feed this baby those little bits, little teeny bits of tits, little small minute things, so that the baby would receive some nourishment. So we have to reprogram people so that they can become independent and want a better life for themselves. Right now, we have a huge, huge problem of social services that we as a society has created. And I'm not talking about the people, but I'm talking about government. Because we have made people think that we can be all things to them. We have growing needs and growing concerns socially. And we have to be able to train people to catch a fish or be able to fish instead of giving them the fish. And unfortunately, it's going to take a long time to get that message through. But that's something that we're going to have to start right away.
Well, Texas is...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, Texas is historically known for being a low-tax, low-services state. Do you see that?
Yeah, when I went in the legislature, I think we was 49th in giving social services to people who were dependent on public assistance.
We bragged about it.
I mean, we probably still do. And it is the mentality of the people at that level who feel like that they can improve their lives and their lives. And we have to have a way to help them change that mental condition.
Okay. One more question regarding budget and revenue. There have been some hearings, legislative hearings through the summer, that your colleague, Representative Alvera, with Appropriations has been hearing, looking at some of the exclusions to the tax codes, sales tax exemptions and other tax breaks, to see if maybe some of them need to be phased out, or maybe the sales tax needs to be extended to services. What's your position on that?
I think we give a lot of exemptions, and I think that we need to start looking at the exemption that we've been given way back in the 1940s and see whether or not they're still relevant. And probably if they're not, we need to eliminate them. We have over $11 billion worth of them. And we need to go through those things and find ways in which we can eliminate some of those that shouldn't be there. I think we ought to start. That ought to be a starting point.
Okay. Since you mentioned redistricting, obviously 2011 is a redistricting year after the census data comes out. That was, to put it mildly, a point of contention back in 2001 and then again in 2003. How do you want to see this process go in 2011, and do you think that there is a chance that could derail the session, you know, make it harder to get other things done?
Well, two things have always happened since I've been in the legislature on redistricting. It's always ended up in the courts, and it always ended up with the redistricting board. Harris County, we're the largest delegation in the state. We can come to a consensus on redistricting of ourselves. And I think that if we do that, then we are one-sixth of the situation as it exists in our state. It's going to be a bone of contention. It always has been and always will be. The question is whether or not that we're going to redistrict in 211, and then we're looking around for another redistricting in 212 and 213 and 214 and 215, because the Republicans who draw their maps may have decided that they don't like the outcome, and then they need to go to court like they did last time and get the court. Then they have their map that's approved by the court, and when they don't like that, then they go and then they say, well, the Democrats are pushing this down our throat, and we need another map. Another redistricting plan.
Your colleague in the Senate, Senator Wentworth, has pushed a plan to do redistricting via a nonpartisan board. Do you agree with that plan?
No, I do not. I don't think that we should give up any power that the Constitution has delegated to us as a member of the legislature.
Okay. Chronicle had a story the other day talking about some hot-button issues for the Republicans and how their voters want them to act on it. And there was a quote in there from your colleague, Representative Solomons, saying that the Republican voters want them to focus on voter ID, on passing an Arizona-style anti-immigration law, and on repealing the otherwise resisting the federal Affordable Care Act. how concerned are you about that sort of thing?
Those do concern me because I have constituency that that would be impacted by it. Every time that there's been the economy has been in some what we would consider a depressed stage, there society always looks for scapegoats, and the scapegoats usually are minorities, are the poor, and this is nothing new. It has been in existence since time immemorial, and it doesn't surprise me. People who have insurance and they're comfortable don't understand why other people who don't have it need it. And what we do a great disservice to counties and cities by pushing this burden, this financial burden on them by doing nothing at the state level to lessen the problem or to accept the money back that we have sent to Washington, D.C. to take care of some of these problems. And I think it is a tremendous disservice to women, children, working families, and the poor.
I mean, do you think, though, that that there will be a prevailing attitude on their side that these issues need attention and that may make the partisan atmosphere too difficult to work in?
I don't think it's going to make the partisan attitude too difficult to work in. It may make it difficult, and I think it could create an atmosphere that nothing gets done, and nobody's going to go home and say, well, we couldn't agree. We're just like people in Washington, D.C. We're going to have to wait another session to go back and resolve all these issues. Nobody wants to go home and say that.
Right. To get back to the speaker for a minute, your colleague, Representative Strauss, is the speaker. He was elected speaker largely on the support of Democrats in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a bit of disenchantment with him lately over some appointments he's made and over the handling of the voter ID issue.
Mm-hmm.
What is your evaluation of Speaker Strauss, and what, if anything, are you hoping he will do this coming session?
Well, I'm hoping that all the committees that will be reflected of the House, both Democrats and Republicans, and that Democrats have more leadership opportunities within the leadership of the House during this session and after the session is over with.
How would you evaluate his first session as Speaker?
I think being new and probably thrust in that position, I probably would give him a B minus.
Okay. What, if anything, should the legislature be doing about immigration and border security?
Immigration is a federal issue. And the border issue comes down to a federal issue, but we can, in fact, work with the federal government through our Homeland Security and to be able to strengthen it. But how do you strengthen it when people can, people want to come over, and they come over, they swim over, they crawl over. You can put a fence up and they find a way over. We're just going to have to find a way in which the economies of other countries are going to be able to sustain themselves and offer opportunities to their citizens where they won't want to come over here.
Okay. In most of the news stories you read about the upcoming election, the prevailing theme is that there's an enthusiasm gap, that Republicans are more energized about this election, that Democrats are, indifferent.
And that goes in cycles. One time the Democrats are more energized and then the Republicans will not. It just looks like it's a cycle thing.
Do you see that in your district?
Yes. Yes, I do. And I think I think a lot of factors play into that. And let me tell you what I think happens. You have a large unemployment in the minority community. We have a lot of unemployment within our area. You got an aging population. You got people with all kinds of health problems. You got a large group of people who just, their minds are not on politics, it's on their problems. And to go and talk to them about political issues or something that they're not interested in, especially when they don't have health care insurance, they don't have their housing, housing it may be not be adequate, or they may be trying to on a waiting list for housing. They need a job. Kids about to start back to school, no clothes, no shoes, all these factors were playing in, into play. And then you have the kids saying, well, Charles Kuffner, kids are going to be dressed well, and I got to wear this old t-shirt, and I got these jeans, and I never going to get this, never going to get that, And then you have a large problem with juvenile delinquency, large problem, school dropout, all these things, all these factors are factoring in, and they can give a hill of a beans about what's going on politically, with all the stresses upon them.
So what do Democrats need to do then to get people to see to feel the need to vote?
Well, they have to have a way in which they can address the issues that impact the people.
Such as,
the health care bill is going to be an improvement. It's going to provide certain opportunities for you to have good health care. How you address the issue of new clothes, I don't know. I remember serving on Appropriations Committee many years ago, and I instituted a program that gave, at that time it wasn't a lot of money, but it was $100 to families with dependent children so they could have some money to go to and buy some clothes. With $100 even then wasn't adequate because you got five or six kids, that just wasn't going to make it, but it was a start. You got to have a way in which you can help them to be able to suit those kids up. And then you got to be able to help them to be able to find jobs that they can be able to sustain themselves.
What message, should the Democrats be giving to voters at large going into November?
Well, we had 8 years of the Republicans' leadership within the state of Texas. And are you going to be any better off with two more years of it? Would you rather see a change in which you believe that there can be some improvement in the area of job opportunities, better housing, better quality of education for your kids and for you?
And you have an opponent on the ballot this fall. What would you say to voters in your district as they go to vote in that race?
I think I need to remind them that that I have I'm at a greater vantage point than my opponent, in that I have experience and institutional knowledge that could better serve my constituents than my opponent would be able to do.
All right. Representative Centroni Thompson, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
You're welcome.